A clemency hearing is underway today for 66-year-old Andrew Brannan. Now, he's been on death row for the 1998 murder of Lawrence County Deputy Sheriff Kyle Dinkeller during a traffic stop.
Just 22 years old at the time, the deputy was shot to death by Brannan, and it was captured on the dashboard video of the deputy's patrol car. And a warning, the following audio is from that video.
Here I am, you mother.
Come here.
Here I am.
Sir, come here. 37 Radio 1078. Come here, sir. Get back.
Where are you calling?
Get back. Now. Get back. Get back. Sir, get back now.
No.
Get back. Sir, get back.
Moments later, a shootout ensues. Deputy Dick Heller is heard screaming and calling for help. He's shot dead at the scene. Andrew Brannan would be arrested the next morning. He was sentenced to death in 2000 and faces execution as early as tomorrow. Joe Loveland is one of Brannan's attorneys. Dennis, when we spoke, I asked Attorney Loveland to describe the current mental state of Andrew Brannan.
Andrew's been incarcerated for the last 17 years, so his world is obviously a tightly constrained world within that. He remains also ill. The PTSD and the bipolar disorder are not something that are cured. They don't go away. So he's under medication for those. He's an enormous remorseful person. He understands that what he did on January 12, 1998 was a terrible and tragic event, and he's awfully sorry for that.
Attorney Loveland, what kind of man was Andrew Brannan on January 12, 1998?
Well, on January 12, 1998, he was out of control. I don't think there's much question about that. Anyone who looks at the video that was recorded from Deputy Dinkeller's car sees the extraordinarily erratic behavior of Mr. Brannan. He gets out of his car. Initially, he appears to be under control, but very quickly, he starts dancing in the street. He's yelling, "Here I am, shoot me." Number of expletives. He rushes at the deputy sheriff at one point, then he runs back to his car, starts rummaging around, and ultimately pulls out the rifle. It's apparent, I think, that a switch flipped in his mind and led to the terrible and tragic events of that day.
Evidence was presented about his experience in the Vietnam War, but you argue the prosecution worked very hard to dismiss that.
Well, let's put it in context, and I think it's important to understand the trial of Mr. Brannan. Once the jury was selected, the entire trial took 1 week, which for a murder trial is pretty remarkably short, particularly one that involves as many issues as Mr. Brannan's case did. There was, of course, no question of whether he shot Deputy Dinkeller. The question was, what happened? You know, what caused this? What was going on in his mind? His defense attorneys argued that he was insane, and they made an insanity defense, and the jury rejected that.
I want to move to the sentencing phase of the trial after his conviction. In your petition for clemency, you argue that certain evidence was not presented during the sentencing phase that the jury never heard, that the jury should have heard, as it relates to Mr. Brannan's post-traumatic stress disorder. What was that evidence?
The counsel had made some strategic decisions to not call certain witnesses or do certain things in the guilt-innocence phase. You know, different lawyers would make different strategic decisions, perhaps. But when you get past the guilt-innocence stage and you get into the sentencing phase, there was a true rush to judgment. The entire sentencing hearing was done on Saturday. The jury came in with the guilty verdict at 10:30 on a Friday night. The judge decided they were going to go immediately into the sentencing phase, and they did that entire phase on Saturday. The jury heard only from the defense side five or six what are called friends and family witnesses who gave very brief explanation of their relationship with Mr. Brannan. But they never heard the things that were really critical to understanding what should happen to Mr. Brannan now that they'd found him guilty. So certainly as part of the effort to build the insanity defense, the defense had called some experts who had reviewed Mr. Brannan's records. They talked about his history in Vietnam. They talked about his military experience. They talked about the fact that he'd been diagnosed with PTSD. That all came out. There's not a question that it came out. The prosecutor belittled much of this. He basically accused Mr. Brannon of being a malingerer. He basically said to the jury, all this stuff about PTSD, I submit everybody's got some PTSD. Everybody's had some trauma. He basically said that when Mr. Brannon was declared to be 100% disabled by the Veterans Administration, which is an extraordinary thing, the prosecutor basically said that he'd worked hard to get that disability rating, that he effectively accused him of faking much of what went on.
Someone listening to this might say, this is not uncommon that we hear claims of some type of mental disability, some type of mental disorder when it comes to a defendant on death row. That's nothing new, and particularly here in Georgia. But also, Attorney Loveland, we're looking at a situation where an officer was killed in the line of duty. But in cases like this, can you understand people on the other side feeling no sympathy or not understanding why all of a sudden now you all claiming mental disability, mental disorder to save his life when he took another life?
Certainly. Let me start with this. I can't even put into words the incalculable sense of loss that I know that Deputy Sheriff Dinkeller's family felt as a result of the murder of the deputy sheriff. He was only 22 years old. He had an infant child, and his wife was pregnant. I understand the sense, certainly, of enormous loss and outrage that comes from that. And then when that's all captured on videotape, you know, it becomes something that is a huge, huge thing to try and overcome with a jury. And that's really why. It's precisely because this crime was so brutal, and it's precisely because the deputy sheriff was, you know, just doing his job, that we think that it was imperative that the jury and that now all of us look at the whole picture. What could possibly lead Andrew Brannon, a person with no prior criminal record whatsoever? And now we know he's been incarcerated for 17 years, no history of violence since then. What could cause this one enormously aberrant, tragic act? And that's what we think needs to be explained here. Now, let me answer one more thing that you raised, which is what's different about this case. And it's this. Andrew Brannon's disability, his PTSD, flows directly and inexorably from his military service in Vietnam.
Where did Mr. Brannon serve? I mean, where and what time did he serve in Vietnam?
He was in Vietnam in 1970 and 71. He was in the Chu Lai province. He was in a time of extraordinary high combat environment. He was, for a period of 6 months, at least as best we can tell from his records, in the field all but 7 days over a six-month period. He was a forward observer, which is out there trying to see the enemy, evaluate where they are, determine how we should be deploying our forces, which was one of the highest fatality rate positions in the Army at the time.
How much treatment did Mr. Brannon receive once he came back? And I'm sure once he was diagnosed, how much treatment had he received up to 1998?
Oh, he'd received an enormous amount of treatment. He had been diagnosed starting in, I believe, the early 80s initially with PTSD. Initially was rated as partially disabled because of that. His life continued to deteriorate. By 1986, I believe it was, he was rated as 100% disabled, directly attributable to his service with PTSD. It was not until the mid-90s that he was then diagnosed as also having bipolar disorder, which dramatically complicates the situation. And so he had been hospitalized on two separate occasions, at least.
You've spoken with Mr. Brannon. Is he at peace at all with the possibility that he may be put to death?
Mr. Brannon understands the process. And he understands that the Board of Pardons and Paroles is probably the last step in that process. He's as I said, very remorseful about the situation. Yes, he understands that there is a very realistic chance that he may be executed. He is hopeful that the support that has emerged through the clemency petition, the support in the veterans community and otherwise, will be heard by the Board of Pardons and Paroles.
Attorney Joe Loveland, legal counsel for Andrew Brennan, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for allowing us to speak on these issues.